Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 25, The Characteristics of King Paranjan. Text 41. Kanama Vira Vikyatam Vadanyam Priya Darshanam Navranita Priyam Praptam Madrishi Twadrisham Patim. Translation. O my dear hero, who in this world will not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Every husband is certainly a great hero to his wife. In other words, if a woman loves a man, that man appears very beautiful and magnanimous. Unless one becomes beautiful in the eyes of another, one cannot dedicate his whole life to another. The husband is considered very magnanimous because he gives as many children to the wife as she likes. Every woman is fond of children. Therefore, any husband who can please his wife by sex and give her children is considered very magnanimous. Not only does the husband become magnanimous by begetting children, but by giving his wife ornaments, nice food, and dresses. But by giving his wife ornaments, nice food, and dresses, he keeps her completely under submission. Such a satisfied wife will never give up the company of her husband. Manu Samhita recommends that to keep a wife satisfied, a husband should give her some ornaments, because women are generally fond of home, ornaments, dresses, children, etc. In this way, the woman is the center of all material enjoyment. In this regard, the word vikyatam is very significant. A man is always famous for his aggression toward a beautiful woman, and such aggression is sometimes considered rape. Although rape is not legally allowed, it is a fact that a woman likes a man who is very expert at rape. Kanama Vira Vikyatam Vidanyam Priya Darshanam Navranita Priyam Praptam Madrishi Twadrisham Patim. O my dear hero, who in this world will not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, so beautiful, and so easily gotten. So, some months ago, or maybe a year, or something like that, there was some controversy, actually perhaps even a couple of years ago, there was some controversy arose about this purport of Srila Prabhupada's, this, at least the last sentence or so, couple of sentences. A man is always famous for his aggression toward a beautiful woman, and such aggression is sometimes considered rape. Although rape is not legally allowed, It is a fact that a woman likes a man who is very expert at rape. So, we're not going to really get into all the details of that but, of course, one interesting point here is this is Paranjan being approached by a lady who he is certainly attracted to. He's very attracted to her. You are exactly like the goddess of fortune, or Parvati, the wife of Lord Shiva, or Saraswati, the goddess of learning, etc., etc. And she reciprocates, you could say, by saying that you are just such a hero, such an exceptional, wonderful, extraordinary, first-class man. Which woman would not accept you? And not only are you just so practically, uniquely qualified, but you are also so easily gotten. It's really interesting situation. Sometimes when we read things like this, because there are passages, a few passages here and there in Srila Prabhupada's books where some man and woman encounter each other and such attractions and emotions arise, or are expressed at least, and sometimes we, a little tongue-in-cheek, as a little bit of a joke, sometimes we say that if anyone, like if any man, any of you young men here who may not be married, if any woman approaches you and says something like that to you, or if any man approaches any of you young ladies and says, you are as good as Lakshmi, Parvati, and Saraswati, you should know something is wrong. Either this person is crazy, because you're not like that. Let's face it. Who amongst us gentlemen, even though you're all very nice devotees and you have many good qualities, I don't doubt, but who here is such a hero that any person in their right mind, any devotee particularly, but any person in their right mind should dedicate their life to you just because of how nice you are? Well, I don't think so, really. You know, we have enough difficulty with ourselves, isn't it? Our minds, our senses, our conditioning, our desires. We have enough difficulty just dealing with ourselves. And if someone is foolish enough or just unaware of who we really are enough to think that we're just so wonderful, then, you know, really they are highly mistaken. We need help. Once Srila Prabhupada was approached by one devotee who said to him that Srila Prabhupada, some other devotee, he's like this and he's like that. and he's too much. And I just, you know, I just can't deal with him. I don't want to deal with him. He's just too much. And Srila Prabhupada said, no, no, he's a devotee. Try to tolerate him and just deal with him in a decent way. And the devotee responded, but Srila Prabhupada, he's like this and he does that and he speaks in this way and these types of things and he's too much. And Srila Prabhupada said, well, he's a Vaishnav. Just try to tolerate him as I tolerate you. So don't worry. You may have your, you have your friends. Everyone has some friends and people like that. But don't worry. There's at least one person in this world who is on an ongoing basis having to tolerate you. Because birds of a feather flock together, but not all birds are of the same feather. And as a result, you know, on the level, at least of the modes of material nature, somebody's mixture of modes will conflict with at least one other person's mixture of modes. And only really when you come to the transcendental platform, or as you come more and more really to the transcendental platform, can you really become more, at least, of like a sort of universally likable person, Dira, Adira, Jana, Priyo, the six Goswamis. They were dear to the sober people, the devotees, and cultured, nice people, and also to the Adira, the not sober and just other types of people of lower character and more easily agitated, more grumpy types of people like that. So here, well, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, it's mentioned in Prabhupada Lilamrita that Srila Prabhupada explained how there in India there is a type of woman who would like to have a child fathered by a saintly man, a sadhu. So, you know, you might get a saintly child. And so therefore such a woman may go to some holy place, because generally that's where you find such men, and, you know, whatever, look around and see who comes along. But then there's a type of man who is aware of that type of woman, and that type of woman, that type of man, who is more interested just in enjoying some illicit sexual relationship, he may dress himself up to appear like that sort of man, like I'm a big sadhu, and go to the holy place looking for those types of women. And it's really another manifestation of the cheaters and the cheated. Because, anyway, it's like that. It's like that. So yes, if any woman tells you, gentlemen, that you are just, who would not accept a husband like you? You are so famous, so magnanimous, and beautiful. You must know. Something is seriously wrong here. Either she's crazy or desperate or something like that. And ladies, if any man tells you, you look like Lakshmi, etc. It's the same situation. But here there is a general point which Srila Prabhupada is making in the purport, and well, it's an important and interesting point that if a man, Prabhupada is saying, if a man is very manly and very dynamic and has some male shakti and protective and a good provider, has and is able to get more material assets, then, at least this is what Srila Prabhupada is saying here, and, you know, I would say that it's very often said in male circles and in general that women are prone to be attracted to that sort of man, rather than, I don't know if I should ask any of the ladies if that's true or not, but Srila Prabhupada says here, and we hear like this. So rather than some, you know, just very unmasculine and unsuccessful and that sort of man. So in these terms, there is certainly a class of man who likes to approach women in that very strong way, very extremely assertive way, and in this way win the woman, usually, at least in Western circles, it means win her just to enjoy briefly and then put her aside for the next one. In these terms, at least some or many, however many, ladies may be attracted to such a person, that very strong, assertive type of man. However, of course, in Vedic culture, in Krishna conscious culture, the idea is that the man will give protection and not just exploit to enjoy and then leave to enjoy another, just going, as they say, from one flower to another, and when having taken the nectar from one as much as possible, just go to the next one and take the nectar from there. So in Vedic culture and Krishna conscious culture, the man is meant to take responsibility and actually traditionally be the head of the family and even the spiritual master, effectively, for the wife and for the family. And this is all part of the dharma and the responsibility for a proper householder, and not just abuse. Any principle, even any good principle, when it is abused, then of course, then it becomes something bad. Like, of course, in India, if you practically ask any person around the world, maybe not so much these days because India is becoming much more accepted due to becoming much more financially, economically successful. But if you go back to my youth, say 30, 40, 50 years ago, in those days, India was famous, really, or known at least, for two things: poverty and the caste system. And beyond that, India was just a big question mark in the minds of any person or from the Western world. Poverty, extreme poverty, and the caste system. So, of course, in the time, in Vedic times, when Lord Krishna was present on the planet, they were a Vaishya community. They were not Kshatriya community, which is generally much more opulent. They were Vaishya community. But we read descriptions and we see pictures of little Krishna and his other friends, little children with bangles, earrings, necklaces. And those were not plastic items manufactured in Shanghai. They were the real thing. They were the real thing. They were solid gold with gems, real gems, and not cubic zirconia, but real diamonds. And they were on the children, on the little children who have no sense of value practically of anything unless it tastes good. So that was for the children of the Vaishyas, and what to speak of the adults, and what to speak of the Kshatriyas. So, but now, like we mentioned, now, but at least a little while ago, India was famous, world famous, for being extremely poor, too poor. So what happened? What happened is that there was degradation, and as a result, the rich got richer and the poor got extremely poor, really extremely poor. So in this way, Vedic principles, Krishna conscious standards, become degraded, and particularly with, say, the caste system. The caste system Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvanyam Maya Srishtam. The four varanas and ashrams, the four varanas were created by me, by Krishna. So it cannot be bad, really. It's created, it's part of the specific arrangement of the Lord for human existence. Guna karma vibhagasha, not janma something vibhagasha, but guna karma. And of course, guna and karma are very intimately linked with each other. Your guna and your karma should not really be different. But that system of varnashram became degraded with Kali Yuga to the point that the sudras and people like that became impoverished and just to the point of just total devastation financially or in terms of standard of living, just placed in a position where you cannot really, you, it's very hard to maintain human standards. And the Brahmins become very rich. Of course, it is part of the dharma of Brahmins to accept donations. So the Brahmins were accepting lots of donations and really playing on that, really trying to impose that on the people. But the other part that they then meant to give charity, they forgot about that. Charity begins at home. So you collect as much charity as you can and keep it at home. So this is all part of Kali Yuga. And then you end up with a society which is the caste system. Then it may also be patriarchal. The males are sort of in a senior position or like that. But then the higher orders abuse the lower orders, and the lower orders just end up in impossible conditions, and then the men exploit the women, and then the women turn around and feel they don't want to be exploited, so they fight back, and then, well, welcome to Kali Yuga. This is Kali Yuga. It really is a fact. And for example, we were just recently in Jagannath Puri, and you all know, not just Jagannath Puri, but different parts of Orissa particularly, they have racial policies in quite some number of the temples. I am based in South Africa. Previously, we had apartheid, racial segregation. Even in America, in some parts, it was still there up till maybe 40, 50 years ago, perhaps something like that. Official racial policies. In South Africa, there was a little slogan: if you're black, step back. If you're brown, stick around. If you're white, you're all right. So, at least officially and actually in many ways, it's not operating now. Although, of course, vestiges are there. But as Kali Yuga progresses, all different types of arrangements where there may be higher and lower, something like that, that type of situation, some people are higher in whatever regard, and some are not so high. An integral part of Kali Yuga is that those who are in the higher part, they will exploit and abuse. Those who are in the lower part will get abused. And, for example, now, I was just listening to a lecture of Srila Prabhupada's just a few days ago, and Prabhupada was talking about abortion. Obviously, the parents are higher in just simple material terms. The parents are obviously very much higher. And the child is, at least in the womb, the child is completely dependent. But Kali Yuga means if the parents feel that it is going to be disadvantageous for us to have this child who just happened to come along in the course of our mutual enjoyment, if it's going to be disadvantageous to us, particularly financially, then let us just kill the child and just carry on enjoying life. So, yeah, this is all part of Kali Yuga. And we are coming out of the storm, out of the storm of Kali Yuga. We're coming under the shade of Krishna's lotus feet. But it takes some time to adjust and to really get the balance and see what is proper and what is not improper. So, you know, they say there's the pendulum phenomenon of going too far one way, then swinging back another way, liberal to the point of being loose and allowing some degradation, swinging back to being too strict and just restricting people, and so they cannot function properly in Krishna consciousness. It's not easy. Kali Yuga is not easy. So, yes. The Krishna consciousness means, though, Krishna consciousness means the only hope. The only hope, particularly in Kali Yuga, but any time, actually, Krishna consciousness means the only hope for true sanity and truly happy life, truly progressive life, and, of course, the only hope for actually achieving the goal of life. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, even such an important part of human life, extremely important part of human life, as Varnashram. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya talks about Daivi Varnashram, divine Varnashram, or Krishna conscious Varnashram, and Asuri Varnashram, which means any form of Varnashram which is minus Krishna. It doesn't have to mean just extreme caste system, but just any form of Varnashram minus Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya discusses this, and Lord Chaitanya says that even if you follow Varnashram very nicely, but minus Krishna consciousness, then your destination will be hell. You'll fall down and go to hell. No matter how pukka a Brahmin you are, and you know all the mantras and tantras and yantras inside out and literally back to front, no matter how qualified you are, but minus Krishna consciousness, your destination will not be good. And particularly in Kali Yuga, it becomes so vivid and so clear. So as aspiring devotees trying to progress in Krishna consciousness under the shelter of Srila Prabhupada, we should understand this point. It is not really fanaticism, although it could be easily seen as such, and if taken the wrong way, it can also become such. But the path of Krishna consciousness, as given by Srila Prabhupada, there is really no other alternative. There's not a good alternative. There's certainly not a very good alternative. There's definitely no excellent alternative. So, Srila Prabhupada, we were listening to the offerings yesterday, and I would say without exception, they were all very wonderful, and some were just extremely wonderful. But there was some expression, as happens sometimes, of some dissatisfaction and some distress due to certain circumstances that may be prevalent in ISKCON or in certain parts of ISKCON, because, you know, sweeping generalizations, they're also, it's not a good idea to make too many sweeping generalizations based on your own local experience. But still, Srila Prabhupada, one time when a devotee was pointing out some faults and even some real faults in Srila Prabhupada's ISKCON, to him directly, Srila Prabhupada quoted an old English saying, "England, with all thy faults, I love thee." Spoken by a true nationalist. But Prabhupada said, "ISKCON, with all thy faults, I love thee." And we should stick at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. And another time Srila Prabhupada said to the same person, same devotee, no matter what happens, never leave ISKCON. Because really, Krishna consciousness as given by Srila Prabhupada is practically the only way, and it's certainly the best way by far for making progress and digging ourselves out of our holes, which we managed to get into due to absorption in Kali Yuga. Srila Prabhupada's movement is definitely the only good answer. So here, these are some thoughts on this subject, maybe not directly addressing the specific point, you know, in so much detail, but taking the principle in certain respects and trying to apply it. Hare Krishna. Well, it's okay. Any comment or question? Maharaj. Kripaya. Yes, Prabhu. How do you deal with these purports, which are very controversial? Well, I could be tongue-in-cheek and say, try and do it like I did by going around it. But not really. No, we have to do a lot of research into what Prabhupada said. Because Prabhupada said many things. And, you know, Prabhupada had an encyclopedic consciousness. And to just take Prabhupada's teachings and just put them in a nutshell, put all of them in a nutshell, all of them, that's not easy. You know, you can say, in a nutshell, chant 16, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Chant 16 rounds, without offenses. Follow the regulative principles. This is sort of like a type of a nutshell. And it's good. But to really encapsulate the whole picture in a nutshell, you'd end up with a pretty big nutshell. So it is vital that devotees become very conversant with Prabhupada's teachings and the different things that Srila Prabhupada said under different circumstances, you know, the principle of application, how to apply like this. And then through doing that and chanting, trying to really chant very sincerely and really trying to chant without offenses and practice Krishna consciousness as Srila Prabhupada gave, then by his mercy and by the mercy of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, then clarity will come. Yeah. Any other comment or question? Yes, Prabhu. He's just making the point that you should study my, Prabhupada said you should study my books very carefully, because in the future, so many people will say, Prabhupada said, did I get it? Yeah. Right. Well, I remember listening to one lecture of Srila Prabhupada's many years ago. We were on traveling Sankirtan, distributing books in England in the early 70s. And we would listen to a class of Prabhupada's during breakfast. So one morning in the class, Srila Prabhupada was saying that, you know, how Krishna deals with the devotees, we should appreciate that. And Krishna's very wonderful, we should appreciate that. Krishna's very beautiful, we should appreciate that. We should appreciate Krishna. And Prabhupada said strongly, just try to understand Krishna. And very good. The next day, next morning, during breakfast, we listened to another tape of Prabhupada giving class. And Prabhupada was saying the universal form and the process of creation and, you know, some big subjects more difficult to grasp. And Prabhupada said very strongly, don't try to understand Krishna. Really? It happened. I heard it. So what do you do? Become schizophrenic. Try and understand Krishna and not understand him. So it takes some research, but not just academic, lexicographic. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta uses this obscure English word in his lecture about Putana. Lexicographic means according to the dictionary. Don't just study his books in that sort of academic sense according to the dictionary. But one has to really chant very seriously and serve very nicely and very sincerely. And then you'll get some help from through the heart. Because without that help from the heart, which really only comes if you're really trying your best, that sort of help, you end up in that lexicographic situation. And Prabhupada, one time, a devotee complained or pointed out to Srila Prabhupada that in this verse, you've translated this verse, some verse, and you've put Krishna in there. But when we look at the Sanskrit, we find Krishna is not there. There's no, like, direct reference to Krishna himself as such. And in other words, he's saying to Prabhupada, are you just giving some interpretation? And it was like a challenge to Srila Prabhupada. What are you doing? Are you concocting something? And Prabhupada said, no, it is my expertise. He could see Krishna there. So like this, if we tune in, we have to tune in to Srila Prabhupada and tune in to Krishna. And in due course, means it may take some time, it may not be today. Then, you know, more and more clarity will come on more and more subjects, including this. You know, because you can imagine if someone just got up today and said, it is a fact that a woman likes a man who's very expert at rape. Okay, very good. And, you know, there would be some problems would arise, because there may be some, you know, subtleties. I mean, there is subtlety there anyway, in the way Srila Prabhupada comes to the point. Yeah. So. some thoughts. Janardhan Prabhu. Okay. Because? Right, right. Yeah, well, that's a good point. How can we develop a taste or more of a taste for Srila Prabhupada's books? Because there are many other books coming. Leela books and translations of Leela books, and even some bad translations of Leela books, actually. So, an interesting point. Of course, there are many things that we can say about how to develop a taste for reading Prabhupada's books. One part of the answer can be by reading them. You know, as a discipline, after all, disciple, discipline, these two words are connected. So if we discipline ourselves and really make a point of reading Prabhupada's books, we'll get a taste for them because they are transcendentally relishable. But an interesting perspective which is there in Srimad Bhagavatam in the second chapter of the first canto, which is a very definitive part, extremely definitive part of Srimad Bhagavatam. In the earlier parts, if I remember correctly, it's verse 16 of the second chapter. It said, Shushusho Shraddhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Syan Mahat Sevaya Vipra Punyatirthanishevanat. That by rendering service to the great devotees, great service is done. By such service, one gains an affinity for hearing the messages of Vasudev. So Srila Prabhupada makes a point in the purport there, and the same message continues in the next verse. Prabhupada makes the point he makes in so many places, one has to render service to the spiritual master. One has to practice Krishna consciousness according to the instructions of the spiritual master, not just as it comes to you. And then if you do that nicely, if you serve the spiritual master, if we serve Srila Prabhupada very nicely, and actually if we serve the devotees in general very nicely, then Krishna appreciates it. And when Krishna appreciates you, then Krishna feels like giving you something, some reciprocation. So what reciprocation does he give in terms of this verse and the following verse also? Vasudeva Kata Ruchi. He gives you a taste for hearing the message of Vasudev. Krishna will give you that taste. So that's an answer. I mean, yeah, that's certainly part of a broader study of the question of how to develop a taste for reading Prabhupada's books. But according to what we gathered from Srila Prabhupada personally, he was not happy if devotees really got into other books. He was not happy. And, you know, at the very least, well, I would say, in my opinion, one should read all of Srila Prabhupada's books at least once before venturing off into other literary, Krishna conscious literary realms. Maybe twice, maybe three times, all of them. At the least to get a very strong foundation. Yeah. And there's so much nectar in Srila Prabhupada's books. so much nectar, it's incredible. It is a fact that you do not, there's no need to read anything other than Prabhupada's books. In order to become Krishna conscious, you do not actually need to read anything other than Srila Prabhupada's books. There's no question of there being a need. And at the very least, in my opinion, if one has read all of Srila Prabhupada's books carefully and, you know, really studied those books, then if there's some good reason, one might possibly look at some other literatures, as long as it's not some funny translation. Oh, Hare Krishna. We have some funny translations around in English. And what to speak of Russian? Oh, my Lord. Unbelievable. Yeah. So if there's like some authorized translation, and if there's really a point to your reading it, and if you really have read all of Prabhupada's books, then it may be okay. And even Prabhupada did say that if you've read all my books, then you may read the books of some of the acharyas, actually. Hare Krishna. I think we have to end. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.